the first 18 verses of the Gospel of John. John chapter 1, the first 18 verses. John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. And there was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came into his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, "This was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him." And I'm going to read one more verse, or two more verses from the 20th chapter of John, the last two verses. It says, "And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that in believing ye might have life through his name." I'm thankful this morning that you have not come to be entertained, or that I am being paid to give you a performance. I don't have a performance to give you. I'll admit I'm very disoriented this morning. Last Sunday, not that this time, but last Sunday for me, I was preaching barefoot with a bag with two live chickens right in the front of the pulpit. So, but we did sing "There Should Be Showers of Blessing" last Sunday too. That's why I want to sing it again today. That brought a little bit of familiarity to it. We are very, very, very thankful to be back home with our church here at Ripley. I thank God for your prayers. This is the fourth time in the last 6 years that I have traveled to India, all four times to preach the gospel, and all four times that has been completely funded and supported by your prayers and the finances of Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. And I thank God so much for you and for your fellowship in the gospel. And I'm so, so happy to be back with you this morning at our home. We got in pretty late last night and then still adjusting to the time change. So I haven't really slept except for a couple of hours. And so I'm not going to try to entertain you this morning, but I do pray that as we recount some of the things that God has done this last couple of weeks and just the things that I've observed, that you would be made to worship God with me today. I want to thank the Lord for the blessing of having Brother Hugh and Sophia with us on this trip. On a personal level, having Sophia with me as she prepares to start her college years was just a very, very special time as a father to be able to share some, just that time and the conversations that we had. And she was a great traveling companion, and I'm so thankful she was able to go. One of the highlights of the trip for me was being with Brother Hugh. The Lord has has placed on his heart a burden for the people of India, for the work there, and the work that he is doing on an administrative level cannot be duplicated, and it takes someone who has a heart for it and also the mind and the energy to focus on it, and I just could not be more thankful for Brother Hugh. The Lord blessed him and Sophia both, I thought, with a special measure of physical strength. I know that some of you were concerned about him and about Sophie, and the Lord just blessed them both with physical strength. One of the highlights for me was Brother Hugh sharing his testimony, I think at least three times, with different churches that were there, and each time the Lord bringing to his mind more memories of how God has blessed him, even in the last, I think, 13 years. I can't remember how many years it's been since his they first discovered the tumor on his spinal cord. And the heart of his testimony, which I hope he'll give here soon as well, but the center of his testimony was that though God has demonstrated His power and His might to him over these last 13 years in an abundance of measurable and ways that he has been able to share, that even if God had done none of those things, if he had died or been paralyzed or any of the things that were supposed to have happened, that God is and would still be very good. And that message resonated with the people there. And I was just filled with just thrill and joy every time that he shared that message, even of how that God had blessed them financially from unlikely sources as they were going through the surgeries and the recovery from his spinal cord surgery. And then even in the years to come, God has blessed them. It was really, really, really wonderful to be with Brother Hugh and Sophia. So the Gospel of John was the focus of our ministry during the time in India. We spent 1 week the first portion of our trip in Tamil Nadu. I know that these names don't mean anything to you, so try to stay with me. I know from the other side how that you can sit there and just sort of think, okay, this is good, but I haven't lived where you've lived the last 2 weeks. I don't really relate. I'm going to try to just share with you, but not make it impossible to follow. So we spent the first portion in one area where Brother Guna lives, where the work first began there 17, 18 years ago, where the churches are more established and more mature, where a lot of the child care activity goes, the orphanages and the child care centers and the community health centers are located. And the last portion of the trip was spent in a couple of states up called Andhra Pradesh. It's about maybe it's 500 kilometers, 300 miles north of where Brother Guna lives. That's probably an 8-hour trip, something like that, just because there are speed bumps on the highway about every half mile. That's not an exaggeration. That's just the truth. And so you average probably, 35, 40 miles an hour driving. The reason for the speed bumps is probably They probably are needed, I suppose, although they're very annoying. But they're needed, I guess, because the traffic is just so intense and people are pulling in and out from all vantage points that there has to be a way to slow the traffic down in order to keep people from just getting killed constantly. So it's a long trip up there. In the last portion of the trip, we spent there ministering among the churches in Andhra Pradesh. We traveled back to Bangalore, which is a big city, and then and traveled home from there. So the messages were centered in the Gospel of John, and I read the first 18 verses of John chapter 1, and then I read the two verses from John chapter 20 that tells us why John wrote this gospel. This gospel is the declaration of the deity of Jesus of Nazareth, the one who was born in Bethlehem in a manger, who came from Nazareth, this small village, who was an obscure village. This one came to adulthood, and then he began to perform miracles. And these miracles were not just feats of magic, and they were not just something to draw attention, He was not a carnival barker, but they were meant to do good. But in a deeper level, they were signs. They were signs of the deity of Jesus, that he did not just come from man, but that he had come from God. And they were given that men might see these signs and believe, that those who were of God, the children of God, the elect of God, might see these signs and believe, and those who were not the children of God, those who were walking in darkness, might see these signs, reject this one, and be condemned. And so we have these signs, these miracles. It starts with the turning of the water into wine. It concludes with the resurrection of Lazarus from the dead. And as Jesus is performing these miracles throughout his ministry, he is also making these statements about himself. And so John records these I am statements. And I'll just run through them with you. John records that Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life. Jesus says, I am the true light. I am the light. He that followeth after me shall not be in darkness, but shall walk in light. John says he was the true light, the light that was the light of men, that life in him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shineth in darkness. So Jesus is the true light that shines into the darkness. Jesus said, I am the door of the sheep. I am the door of the sheep. So the way into the sheepfold is through Jesus. The way into the security and safety of the sheepfold is through Jesus exclusively. These statements that where he says, I am, he's saying, I and only I am these things. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door of the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I am not the hireling. I am not the thief. I am not a robber. But I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. In John 14, Jesus said to his disciples, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No man can come to the Father but by me. In John 15, Jesus says, I am the true vine, I am the vine. My Father is the husbandman, ye are the branches. So I am the vine, abide in me, and I'll abide in you, and you'll bring forth fruit. I am the vine from which fruit is produced. I'm the true vine. And then in John 11, Jesus, before he has raised Lazarus, he tells Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he die, yet shall he live. He shall live. So the hope of the resurrection is found exclusively in Jesus. In John 1, verse 18, where it says that no man has seen God at any time, that's a barrier the Old Testament points to us often. You can't see God. You can't approach God. He's too holy. He's too exalted. No man has seen God and lived. That's the common understanding of God in the Old Testament is that you cannot see God. Paul says himself that he dwells in the light which no man can approach into. And so what John is saying here in verse 18, he says, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. So this barrier of seeing God is broken to where you can see God, you're enabled to see God, and the barrier is broken through Jesus. So it's through Jesus that we see God. So Jesus in this passage is saying, or in this whole gospel, his whole ministry is saying, I am, look at me. I am the vine. I am the bread. I am the life. I am the light. I am the door. I am the resurrection. I am the shepherd. I am the way. I am. If you want to see God, you must see God through me. And so Jesus reveals God. Jesus gives us a true sense of what God is like. He shows God to us. And Jesus redeems us to God. And then Jesus is the resurrection. So his ministry or his person is to reveal God, to redeem us, and then to bring life and resurrection. So this is sort of the crux of what the Gospel of John is all about. And the goal is that in seeing Jesus in this passage, that we believe in Jesus as being all these things that he claims to be. As you know, India is, I think, 97% Hindu. That's the way of life. It's what the Hinduism, I don't forget the word, but the word is the way of life. It's the enlightenment. India is a place, and I guess this is what stands out to me. It's a place of incredible natural beauty. We'll show you pictures later. You've seen pictures before. But this time of year was a rainy time, and so things were more green. And the natural beauty just spoke so loudly to the handiwork of the Creator. That's what nature does, right? When you look away from the earth, or away from the human part of the earth, and you look just to the natural creation, you see the glory of God manifested in such remarkable ways. It is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. Beautiful mountains, beautiful scenery of all kinds, a beautiful, beautiful land. And you cannot help but see the glory of God and the beauty of God as you see the land. I love the land of India. But what's so strong is the contrast between the glory of God in nature and the darkness of human depravity. So that when you look into if you look away from the mountains and away from the scenery and come right back to the human level, you see, especially for us, as Western people, you see the darkness of man so, so starkly. You see this in a number of ways. In the rural areas, you see this through the ignorance that is brought on by Hinduism and the caste system. And you see the ignorance and the poverty of the people. You know well about that. We've talked about the poverty of the people many, many times. But the villages are, I guess India is sort of a real strange mix of progress and modern inventions. And then also a big portion of India is still like stuck 200 years ago. So where you still see, you know, water buffalo plowing the fields and people holding the disc and walking through the fields plowing and people bent over in the rice paddies, spending hours in these muddy rice paddies attending to the crops. But the human depravity, to me, is to my observation, is just so stunning. Now, it's not really, as far as depravity goes, we're going to see in a few minutes, as far as depravity goes, our depravity outside of Christ is just as stark to God. God sees our depravity clearly, right? We don't see that. We are more civilized. We have better hygiene. The food's not that bad. It's really not. The preparation of the food, however, the serving of the food is a different story. A couple of quick stories I just thought of. Went to a restaurant. Sophia did great. She got sick the very last day. I can't blame her for getting sick. It was just a hot day. It was a trashy day. We had been served this Indian breakfast this morning at this restaurant. Since we were Westerners, they wanted to give us utensils, forks, to eat our food with. And so the waiter proudly reaches into his nasty pocket and pulls out the forks and hands the forks to eat with. It was disgusting. And we had another restaurant. There was the waiter, he's very proud of his restaurant, and he was very talkative and friendly. So he brings us these plates. He wants to take care of us, and he wipes the plates down, and he looks at them more closely, and they're still dirty. So he takes the hand, and he starts scrubbing the plates with his nasty hand, and he hands them to you, and you just got to eat. You just got to deal with it, right? So I don't forget where I was going with all that, but it just came to mind that the human depravity of the ignorance of the villages and the poverty of the villages, but then in the bigger cities, the corruption, the corruption and just the toll of humanness on this world. So it's a really rainy season right now. Let me give you a couple of examples. Really rainy season right now. And in Bangalore, where we were the last couple of days, in Bangalore, it's raining. It's a packed city. And so the lakes are overflowing. And there was, you know, video and pictures. They have these lakes that are polluted with just the toxic pollution of people who just don't care. 80% of the buildings in Bangalore are not built to code because the people just don't care. And once they get it built, they figured you're not going to tear it down. So there are big buildings that are leaning this way and had to be demolished this week because of the rain, because they're not built very well. So these lakes, there was video of this white foam, toxic foam erupting over these big retaining walls into the neighborhoods and the houses and the streets of just companies who have polluted the waters, lakes that burn because of these are the same lakes that people are getting their water from and doing their washing from and doing whatever else from. It's awful, 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 awful. There was part of the flooding was made worse because these malls would just dump their garbage into the storm drains. And so these plastic fills up the storm drains, plastic bottles and plastic whatever fills the storm drains. And they just, so when the water, when the rain comes, it just overflows, right? So while we were there, there's a big scandal going on. And this is just trying to give you a picture of the human depravity. In Uttar Pradesh, a state in India, Uttar Pradesh has 200 million people in it. That is more than just a handful of nations in the world in one state here. One of the hospitals in Uttar Pradesh is supposed to be the best hospital in this town, in this city in Uttar Pradesh. The medical college, it's huge. It's a city block long, has 1,000 beds in this hospital. Now, don't think hospital like our hospitals, it's just different. It's not the same. Because of the need for the hospital, the beds have 2 to 3 to 4 kids, pediatric kids, in each bed, and the hallways are lined with the families. So their bed rolls, their food, their water bottles, their wash, their whatever is in the hallways of this hospital. It's awful. 60 children, toddlers and young children, died last week in this hospital. The reason they died, they were sick, obviously, but the reason they died was because the company that supplies oxygen to the hospital has not been paid. And there was a $100,000 bill that the hospital owed the company. They had the money, but they had been funneling it off to the top administrators of the hospital, supposedly, and they had not been paid. The company had warned them and warned them and warned them. And so on last Friday, the nurses came into the rooms and they handed the parents these manual pumps and said, here, take this and just keep pumping and hopefully pump oxygen to your children. The company turned the oxygen off and 60 kids died. And that is just a story for the last week. The corruption of human depravity can be seen in a lot of ways. I thought that was a pretty good depiction to share with you of a place that does not know the Lord Jesus Christ. And in the middle of all of this is it's more other places, but what I'm aware of is a tiny little pocket. I mean, a tiny drop of a bucket of those who are elect and regenerated and are followers of Jesus Christ. And the light that proceeds from those who are followers of Jesus Christ is completely different than everything that I just described to you. So I want to share with you, I guess, 4 things that stood out to me during this trip. In John 10, Jesus says, I'll begin reading in verse 7. Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. all that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not, but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is an hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep and am known of mine. One of the things that was really special for me on this trip, and maybe it's because I was in the book of John and thinking about all these statements of Jesus. I am this. I am this. And it was for me, it was seeing actual shepherds. It was not a surprise to you this morning for me to say Jesus is the good shepherd, was it? You know that. We know Psalm 23 very well. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. In my life, though, I have not thought of Jesus as a shepherd in the way that I've thought about him the last 2 weeks. When I think of shepherding and Jesus and sheep, I think of sheep usually. And we know the story of sheep. Sheep are dumb. Sheep need a leader. Sheep need someone who's in trouble. Sheep are vulnerable. All these things that we know are true. So sheep need a shepherd. But what I had not considered, at least thought about very much, was the role of the shepherd or what a shepherd is. In India, there are lots of shepherds. Shepherds that shepherd goats, shepherds that shepherd sheep, shepherds that shepherd cows, different things, water buffalo, different things. And the thing that stood out to me is that shepherding is such a menial, insignificant job. I can't imagine. The shepherds, frankly, don't look like, and I'm sure they didn't. Shepherding doesn't make you big money. Shepherding, nobody goes to shepherds to ask them their advice. Nobody goes to shepherds to find wisdom. From the looks of them, shepherds are the poor, they're the ignorant, they're just the ones who can't do anything else, and so they at least can keep up with sheep. They serve an important role. But as far as the caste of this world, they're in a pretty low place, aren't they? Jesus came to this world. John emphasizes that he was the one that was in the beginning. He was the one who formed everything that is. Nothing was made that was not made by Jesus. Nothing. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. So every bit of light and every bit of life comes from Jesus. And Jesus comes into this world. And he comes into this world. Born in a manger in Bethlehem because there was no room for him in an inn. He's born in suspicious circumstances. Even years later, people are still talking about, well, where did Jesus really come from? Really, who is his father? Does anybody really know? So he came into a world of rumors about his generation. Had his mother sinned? Is that why he's here? He's from a small village. I wish I could show you what these villages are like. You remember when Nathanael said, can anything come good come from Nazareth? That's sort of the same thought that I get when I think of these villages in India. Can anything really good come from there? Can anything significant, can anything wise come from there? Friends, when it says that Jesus humbled himself and took on the form of a servant, I saw that more poignantly than I've ever seen it in my life before. What an unlikely place for the one who is the true light that lighteth every man that comes into the world to come from. Remember Isaiah in Isaiah 52 says, who hath believed our report? Who would really believe? Seriously, 2,000 years ago, in a place not unlike these villages in India, Jesus was born to Mary. He grew up not studying in the great halls of philosophy or education, but he grew up the son of a carpenter, a laborer. He comes from these very small circumstances, and he claims to be the light of the world. He claims to be the Son of God. He claims to have authority over all. And Isaiah says, who's going to believe this report? And the answer to that is only one answer, right? It's only to those to whom the arm of the Lord has been revealed. Many in India, when they hear about Jesus, they say, well, he's just another god. He's one among many. There are many gods. We have local gods. He's a foreign god. There are many, many, many gods. And Jesus says, no, I am the true light. I am the Son of God. The idea that Jesus would take on, that the God who formed this world would take on the role of a shepherd and shepherd sheep is awesome. Jesus was not obligated to us. His only obligation was by the covenant that he had made to love and to save and to reveal God to his chosen. And Jesus comes to this world in the most pitiful and small of circumstances. He is our shepherd. I don't know how you relate to God. It's no wonder that the religious elite and the pagans alike rejected Jesus. It's no longer they doubted. It's no wonder that they doubted that he was really anything to listen to. And I wonder if that's not the way it is with us sometimes too. That he's just a carpenter's son. He's just a shepherd. What do I have to learn from him? What does he have to say that is so life-changing and different? John writes this gospel that we might see that the one who was a carpenter's son, who came from this small little village, was the Son of God. And that you who believe that might follow him as the sheep would follow a good shepherd. That you would hear his voice, that as you hear his voice, you would recognize that this is the voice of one who I must follow, and that you would follow him in every way, that every place that he leads. I wish I could share it with you better. Just how precious it is to me that God would lower himself to such a low level, and then that he would reveal himself to me, that he's not just an insignificant, small, ignorant shepherd, but he is the Lord of glory. The other thing that stood out to me, it always does, is the great contrast of light and darkness. The darkness we've already described. John talks a lot about light and darkness. John says that darkness loves darkness. John says that darkness cannot see the obvious. John says that darkness sees the sins of others, but does not see my own sin. John says that darkness is bondage. And John says that when we're walking in darkness, we fear man more than we fear God. And John says there's only one light that shines through darkness, and that is Jesus Christ. Now, you probably already know what I'm going to say, but let me just say it anyway. The darkness there is so obvious, right? I mean, taking the oxygen away from 60 kids because you didn't pay the bill just seems crazy. The filth, the trash, the whatever seems obvious to us. The ignorance, the poverty, the superstition. But our culture in America, every report they got back from the news, whatever you saw there, it was darkness as well, wasn't it? Just in a different form. It's easy for us to see the darkness in other lands and go, wow, how dark, how awful that is. But to look at ours and say, this is normal. We have better foundations here in America, right? We have better civilization, better hygiene, better infrastructure. Much of that is because we were built on at least a God-fearing platform. But brothers and sisters, can't you see that eroding before our very eyes? Isaiah says that there's a time, and the time is here, and he's called a curse on this time, when men call good evil, and they call evil good, they call light darkness, and they call darkness light. For all of history, there's been a battle over what is light and what is darkness. In our world today, in our culture, in the Western culture today, that which is light, according to Scripture, is called darkness. It's called evil. Must be silenced. Must be hushed. Must be set aside. And that which Scripture says is darkness is called light. It's called enlightenment and wisdom and understanding. So my prayer is that we would understand that when Jesus says, I am the true light, Jesus is saying, I and I only am the true light, and everything else is darkness. So there's two things that should cause us to do. Number one, it should cause us to run from darkness. I don't want to be associated with darkness. Now, that's not true of us, is it? We don't mind darkness that bad, do we? We don't mind darkness coming to our eyes through the things that we watch. We don't mind darkness coming to our ears through the things that we listen to. We don't mind darkness overcoming our thoughts and the way that we interact with others. We don't mind darkness that bad. We should hate darkness. Run from darkness. There's something that makes my blood boil when I see the effects of the caste system. It's awful the way human beings are treated. And in the same way, brothers and sisters, it should make our blood boil when the thing that we take in is fun entertainment or whatever it is so opposed to the kingdom and the rightness of God. It's the same sort of darkness, same darkness, different form. So it should cause us to run from darkness, but the other thing that should cause us to do, it should cause us to run to the light. That's the good news. In a completely dark world, Jesus is the true light. Here's what the light does. The light brings understanding. The light restored and made whole the woman who was caught in adultery. The light reveals the glory of God. The light brings understanding to men. The light gives us the ability to have rational understanding. The light brings wisdom. The light brings life. Jesus says, I am the true light. He that believeth in me, though he were in darkness, yet now shall he walk in the light. Brothers and sisters, what a blessing it is, what an amazing thought that it is, that Jesus is the true light. And Jesus, as we follow him, he will not let us go into any places of darkness. Now, that should cause you to run to the light. Lord, if you are the light, let me... And here's what David says in Psalm 119, verse 30. He says, the entrance of thy words brings light. And so what is your relationship with the light? Do you run to the light to get wisdom? Do you run to the light to be restored? Do you run to the light to see the glory of God? Do you run to the light with your problems? Do you run to the light with your cares? Do you run to the light with your misunderstanding? Do you run to the light? Praise God, Jesus is the light. It's made a huge difference in our country. It has. In the starting of our country, there is no comparison between America and India. We are so favored. But it's because of the light. Right? Not because of our brains or our caste or whatever we are, our color. That's ridiculous. We have fooled ourselves to thinking that we are superior because of our race. It's ridiculousness. The only thing that we have that makes us anything different is the light. And the light is Jesus. And the light is the Word of God. And so let me just put a thought into your mind that I would love to see us do. We'll talk about this in a minute, but the child care centers, it's amazing what they're doing for these kids in these villages that are so pitiful. And they bring these kids in and they teach them and they do tuition. They call it tuition, it's tutoring. They do tutoring. They teach them the scriptures and they feed them. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful act of service. But there's something more that I would like to see us do that would be, I think, really meaningful. And that is, I would like to see us buy every single one of those kids a Bible. Because ultimately, that's what will lead them to light. If you want to see a village changed, and oh, if you were there, you would want to see a village changed. If you want to see a village changed, they need some light. And the light is Jesus Christ. We can buy Bibles for about $5. I think it's $5, $4, $4 a Bible. We could buy Bibles for every one of those kids they're ministering to for $1,000 or less, okay? So I want to see us, young people, start saving your money and pitching in. I want to see us have those Bibles by the end of the year, okay? That's the light. Now the glory is to see the light shine in this dark country. And so one of the things that we did that was really special, it was kind of weird at first, I didn't know what it was, but when we got into it, it was really wonderful, was they had a child dedication. And here's what that meant. There were these two, one was a baby, one was a toddler. They brought them to the front of the church, and then I spoke, and then Daddy prayed for them. But here's, and I've told you about this before, but let me tell you about it again. Here's what we did. We said to these parents wanted a Christian blessing upon their children. They wanted to dedicate their children to the Lord. Now, what that means is nothing. It just means that we want to raise our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. But you know what that means, right? In a Hindu culture. What that means is that you have to register your child as a Christian or as a Hindu. If you register your child as a Christian, then, you know, I've told you about this before, there are opportunities that you just miss out on. Scholarships, jobs, everything else is the opportunities are way, way, way lessened if you are marked as a Christian. So you consider a parent who loves their child. And I'm standing before them and I say, we cannot confer on your child salvation. Can't do that. That must come from God's grace. But you are saying that you want your child to be marked out as a Christian or in a Christian home. You must remember that this child is a gift from God. It's only by His grace that this child will be a child of God. But I am challenging you, I'm calling upon you to raise this child in the nurture and the admonition and the fear of God. That you will tell them of Jesus. You will teach them of the light. You will raise them to fear and honor and obey God. Brothers and sisters, that's an amazing thing. You want the best for your children, right? It's part of the problem in our Christian world, in America. The best for our children means a good education. The best for our children means a good job. The best for our children means they make, you know, the honor roll. And so we push those things a whole lot more than we push the instruction and the fear of God in their minds and in their lives. I'm not saying that. I mean, as a general statement, of course. But to mark your child as a Christian, there's other stories. Brother Goodis tells of one of a man named James who followed Christ, was rejected by his family, eventually died of a brain tumor, but died as a happy, faithful Christian. If there's one concern that I have on the work there in India, it is that the cultural competition. Everybody's in it for themselves, right? It's kind of a weird mix of really hospitable and really in it for yourself. Let me give you some examples. So we pulled to a gas station, and if you're in a gas station, you just kind of get in line, right? The car in front of you goes, and you go. We pulled to a gas station. Here's how it works. The person who will get to the pump, and this is not an exaggeration, the person who gets to the pump is the person who either has the best angle or who blinks first in the game of chicken. Right? So you just sort of edge up there, then you edge up there, and you edge up there, you edge up there, you edge up there, you edge up there, and then somebody pulls into the gas pump. It's just competition. Everybody's in it for themselves, right? And so that bleeds over to the Christians, too. The idea of wanting to have some advancement and jealousy between preachers, between members, and that occurs there just like it does here. And it shows up. Will you pray for them? Pray for them that they would walk in the light. Let me just share one more thing, not close. In John 13, we know the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And he says to his disciples, I think it's verse 35, he says, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, because ye have love one to another." So the light of Christ shines into the darkness, shines into our hearts, calls us to know Christ, to love Christ, and then to love others. So love is a product of the work of the Spirit in our lives. We love Him because He loved us. We love others because He loved us. So we love vertically, we love horizontally because He loved us. One of the things that's so impressive to me about the Christians there, the Primitive Baptists, the people there, is that is their attitudes of love and their thoughts of service towards their communities. Much of the time we think in terms of our world around us as don't be conformed to the world. That's right. We shouldn't be conformed to the world. We shouldn't be like the world. We should resist the temptations of the world. Those are all true things. But I don't know that we consider so much that being loved by God just naturally means that we have a desire to do good to those who are around us. And that is so, so, so clearly a mark of the Christians there in India. Let me give you a couple of examples. This is one towards loving the brethren. I was so thankful to see this. The churches in Tamil Nadu are more established. They've been there longer than the church in Andhra Pradesh. Recently, the churches in Tamil, some of the deacons went with Brother Guna up to the Andhra Pradesh to visit among the churches. They came back, they saved up their money, and they bought a church in Andhra Pradesh, a little minivan. That was unthinkable. They never, ever considered the ability to drive is a blessing. The ability to be able to buy a vehicle is impossible if Andhra Pradesh is very poor. They bought them a minivan. They're also supporting 6 ministers in Andhra Pradesh from the churches down there. What a blessing is to see that. The self-sufficient supporting work that's beginning to happen there. But another example is this, the ministry towards the villages. There's I've told you about the ignorance, the poverty, the health. And so there is I forget what they call them, health centers, I forget what they call them, but there's like 6 or 7 women that are organized for different villages, I think 7 different villages. And in this center, they have I have pictures of them. They have a drawing that each of them has drawn. And on the drawing, they have drawn every house in the village. And they keep up with the village. For example, this one drawing I have, it says 709. There's 709 people in the village. And it says 4. It means there's 4 pregnant women in the village. And there's another number. That means how many, I think, kids are in the village. And what they do is they go to the pregnant women and they teach them about prenatal stuff. They help them get their vitamins. They help them go to doctor's appointments, figure out what their rights are. They're just trying to educate and teach. And the ignorance is beyond the pale of what we can really understand. They just want to, from the very most basic level, do good to all men that are around them. Friends, I praise the Lord for that. I praise the Lord for a heart that seeks to serve others, the belief that the calling of Jesus to light is also the calling of Jesus to love. I think Brother Lewis told you about the chickens in the offering last Sunday. That was sort of surprising. I looked down, we were there singing, Brother Hugh and Sophia and Daddy, I actually sing a song. We were singing the Solid Rock. We were on verse 1. I looked down and I said, there's 2 birds in that bag. And I kept looking at it, and I said, I think I saw one of them blink. And I looked at him again, and I said, I know that bird just blinked. And then it was chickens, and they started getting a little bit higher. So I asked him really good, I said, what in the world is those chickens in the bag on the pulpit? And he said, well, that's an offering. There's a lady there who has been there for years. She's a wonderful lady. She has AIDS, and you can see it in her face. She's not healthy at all. She's very poor. But she wanted to bring the Lord her first fruits. She didn't have money to bring, but she had a couple of scrawny little chickens, and she brought those chickens as her offering to the Lord. And so I ask you, what are you bringing to the Lord as a way of service? What are you bringing to the Lord as a way of worship? Are you bringing the Lord all your complaints? Lord, you haven't done me right. You haven't done me fair. You haven't done me good. Or are you bringing the Lord, Lord, I don't have much to bring you, but I'll bring you my praise. I'll bring you my devotion. I'll bring you my finances. I'll bring you my all. Take my life. Take my life and let it be, Lord, because you are the true light. You are the bread of life. You're the one who nourishes me. You're the one who keeps me. You're my shepherd. You are my all in all. I really wish I could relate better to you. The stirrings of my heart as I see the Lord work there. I'm so thankful that I live here, though. I'm thankful that I live among you. And I'm thankful for the way that you have ministered to those people over there. Those are our brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ. We will live in eternity with them forever, and I can't wait to get there and experience that. I'm so thankful for the connection that God has given us to those people. I'm so thankful for the light that shines in the darkness. I'm so thankful to know the true light that is the Lord Jesus Christ. Brother Hugh, do you want to say a few words to the church before we close out?
Well, Brother Isaac has said some of the things that I had intended to pass on to y'all this morning. I know we'll say more later. We put together some pictures and slides. But there's really, anytime you go to another culture like that, the sights and the smells and the sounds and the taste, there's just so many things that will stand out to you. And, you know, Brother Isaac said that the food wasn't that bad. Well, the food was actually really good. It's a little spicy, but just reminded, I just called it Far East Tex-Mex, and it was anyway, there's really 3 things that stood out to me. And the first, Brother Isaac covered it pretty well, is just the spiritual darkness that those people are in. And I know there's, like Brother Isaac said, there's darkness here in this land, but it manifests differently there. Just with the Hinduism and the idols. We went and had a service on the rooftop of a house of a church member there, in one of the little villages. And we looked over to the house next to it, and here was this face on it. You just open probably any encyclopedia or dictionary and turn to devil or Satan, that's the picture you would see. This ugly, grotesque face with these horns sticking up on it. You know, that's just one of their gods. And we saw it other, that was the first place we saw it. But then we saw it painted on building after building. You know, and that's just, that's what they worship, is just these demons. And so the first thing is just that spiritual darkness. But then the second thing that stood out greatly to me is the, I see y'all laughing back there and I know why. Carson. Okay, well, looking over at this grotesque face, Isaac's standing there and Brother Zach walks up and says, "Hey, that looks like Carson." But Carson got him back later because he was talking to him and he knew what he had said. And he said, "Well, I was glad to know you think of me as a god." So anyways, contrast to that is two things. The first is just God's grace. You see these churches and the people, and it's just unbelievable the difference in their attitudes, and you can tell that the weight and the burden that you see on all these other people that are just going through their daily lives, you don't see on these people. You just see that relief. I mean, it's hard to even put into words. You know, and they're not any better off financially than those other people. They just know God is there. He's theirs. And it's just, it's hard to explain. But then the other thing is their response to it. The responsibilities that they see, that they have to serve the living God. And Brother Isaac, you know, he talked about the chickens. That's just one story of one person, of their commitment and devotion. She didn't have any money, so she brought these two scrawny chickens because that's what she had. And it's just amazing the way that those people serve. And it's just a blessing to see. Hard to put into words. But pray for them. Pray for the churches and those ministers. Those ministers, they're going out every day to those villages and evangelizing. And those child care centers. There's about, what are there, four right now. And one of them is unfunded, so we're going to have to find funding for it. But there's three or four other villages that want to bring those in to help their communities. And to evangelize. Each one of those child care centers has about 40 kids in it. And I'm sure some of those are the church members, but a lot of them are just kids from the community. And those kids, most of them go to church on Sunday. And most of those that go to church on Sunday, their parents come with them. So out of a village of 700 people, a good portion of those are hearing God's word every day where those child care centers are. And, you know, I just can't help believe that if they're willing to go and listen and set to the gospel, that God's not going to do a work in some of their hearts. And so we need to figure out how to get funding for some more of those child care centers. So.
Thank you for listening to this message. Our prayer is that you've been blessed by the messages and the daily devotional blog on sermon audio from Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. We would love the opportunity to be of greater service to you and your walk with Christ. In other words, we would like to get to know you better. Do you have need of counsel, of a home church, or can we just pray for you? Please feel free to contact us by phone at 662-837-8590 or visit our website at www.ripleypbc.com.